Welcome back to Starting Nine, episode 26. It is the Hall of Fame episode. I'm your host, Jared Carabas. We got Dallas Braden in the house. We got Justin Havens in the house. We've been waiting for this one for a while because I wrote about this morning about how, for some reason that I don't quite understand or know why it is this way, the Baseball Hall of Fame is more discussed, more debated, more cared about than any other Hall of Fame in sports and even just in general, like the Rock and Roll Hall. What other fucking Hall of Fames are there besides?
I mean, there's a Hall of Fame for everything. Really.
Yeah, there really is. I mean, there's the Saugus High Hall of Fame, which I should be in. I'm not, but I feel like I should be.
You can't scratch the soggy ass Hall of Fame.
That's
come on.
Yeah. My brother played like varsity volleyball and is in our high school's Hall of Fame, I think.
Yeah. I'm gonna write a letter to my high school and be like, what the fuck?
Yeah. No, you know what? Ground screw, you got some homework. Let's get Carabas into the Saugus Hall of Fame. Carabas for Saugus Hoffer. Let's do it.
Yeah, I'm the Edgar Martinez of the Saugus High Hall of Fame. I've been waiting for 10 fucking years to get in.
Probably not.
So we have the new Hall of Fame class. We got Jim Thome. We got Trevor Hoffman. We got Chipper Jones. And we got Vladimir Guerrero. Dallas, your thoughts on the 2018 class?
You know what, man? It's a good looking thing. It's a good looking thing. Yeah. For those that have gotten the nod, I mean, we can get into who you think should have been on there, blah, blah, blah. But I think out of respect for the individuals that did get the nod, let's pay attention to that. That's kind of what I want to do right now. So for the guys that got the nod, you think about them and you think, ultimate performers, Dick Vitale, primetime performers. These are PT peers their entire fucking careers. And they did it at a pace and they did it at a level of production that just, I mean, it clearly it's dwarfed others in comparison. But I also think about guys like Hoffman and you think about guys like Rivera and you think, well, you know, the whole save discussion that's going on. These are giants among their era. All right. And that is what I think needs to be considered when you start to, you know, talk about the relievers and things like that. Like, let's pay attention to what these guys did in an era where the game was evaluated and assessed and played in a manner in which you having that guy being able to fill that role meant a whole hell of a lot. And then you go to, I mean, just like Chipper, you look at those numbers. The switch hitter. I mean, I'm basically, Jared, I am in love with who has gotten the nod here. I am totally, totally okay with it. All the way up to Jack Morris and Alan Trammell getting voted in.
You're gonna trigger Justin over here.
That's fine. Jay he can pipe down because legends amongst their eras. All right. And that's what I think about when I think about these guys too. Like, let me tell you a story about Vlad Guerrero.
Okay. I like where this is going.
Joe Blanton, I think it's got to be early, like April, May, maybe, I think. But Vlad is just absolutely on fire, and we've got two outs and nobody on, and Bob Guerin wants to intentionally walk Vlad Guerrero, so we do, and Blanton is absolutely furious, just hot, throws the four hardest pitches of the day on those four pitches of Vlad Guerrero away from him. But the moral of the story here, the take-home message, I guess, is twofold. One, I wouldn't want to fuck with Joe Blanton at any point in time and piss that guy off. Two, Vlad Guerrero was so hot and was pumping so much fear, not only at that time in the season, but in the game at that time. That's who this dude was. So you think about Barry Bonds getting intentionally walked to score a run. Sure, that's next level, next universe, other galaxy type shit. But to the same, like, we don't even want to give this guy a chance to make it 1-0. You know, right. Like, nah, we're good. And that's just the kind of fear he invoked in people. So I remember facing Thome in spring training and throwing him a cutter down and away. I'm working on a cutter, and I throw him a cutter down and away, and he absolutely laces this ball off the wall. It's a single, right? It's a single because he's not moving too well. But he hit it hard
exit
enough.
Velocity
it should have been a
117
fucking
miles an hour.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, exactly. It broke shit. I just remember, kind of asking him after the inning broke as we passed. I'm like, are you on that? What did, I was like, that have anything for you? And he said, little to no depth. Maybe put a bigger wrinkle in it. And I'm just thinking to myself, you know, like even he could have been an asshole. He could have completely ignored me. But he took that 5 seconds to just say what he had to say to me in passing. And it's just little things like that that leave an impression with guys that you know are going to the Hall of Fame. Like I might have had those kinds of exchanges with other players, but you remember those sorts of moments, the Vlad Guerrero getting intentionally walked moments, the Jim Thome telling you to put a little bit bigger wrinkle in your horseshit breaking ball. that's just, you remember those things. You take those things with you. And
Dallas, you faced Vladimir Guerrero 16 times. How many times did he get a hit off of you?
I'm gonna say probably a few.
How many?
Probably a few. 16 times. I'm gonna say maybe 5 or 6.
Three.
Seven.
Three.
Three. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh.
You faced Jim Thome 3 times. How many hits did he get off of you?
One hit.
It was just one hit, and you never faced Chipper.
No damage.
Yeah.
No damage. No homers
damage
for Thome.
Yeah.
No doubles for Thome.
No doubles. Chipper Jones,
no
you
Vlad.
Never faced.
No homers. Hold on. No homers for Vlad. Let me fucking come
correct.
On.
Correct. No homers for either.
No. So no doubles for Vlad either, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It was no doubles.
No either. Damage. No damage. They could have been broken bat infield bullshit hits, Jared. I don't know. I don't remember that. I do remember no homers. I do remember no damage. That's right. Suck it.
They probably saw your fastball coming to the plate and they were laughing so hard that they couldn't get any power behind it. So they kind of just bled one into to the little blooper.
Hey, let them get themselves out, Jared. Let them get themselves out.
I was actually impressed when I saw the Vladimir Guerrero numbers. I was like, wow. I was expecting to look that up, you know, the lefty-righty matchup and be like, Vlad probably killed Dallas. Nope, not the case. Good for you.
Not the case. Put a silencer on him. Put a silencer on him.
You said that you wanted to focus on the guys who got in. That's kind of not where my focus is at today. I mean, I 100% acknowledged who got in, gave them their praise. Also, by the way, one other quick note on Vlad. Ballpark adjusted OPS, OPS plus. He has the same career OPS plus as Alex Rodriguez. Did you know that, Dallas?
I did not know that.
Yeah. Vlad Guerrero, Mashtown. And wow. Then the other thing, too, about Trevor Hoffman taking 3 years to get in, I thought that was a little odd. If you retire as the all-time saves leader, you should be in. I mean, like, you shouldn't have to wait around for that shit.
What about? Yeah, you know, and if you retire as the all-time hits leader, you know, I think you should be in. If you retire the all-time home run leader, I think you should be in. Go ahead. Take a long walk off a short cliff with that shit because it ain't flying. I appreciate it fully. 1,000% behind you there, but that's just not the fucking world we're living in these days, unfortunately.
But for all different reasons, though. You've got I don't know what Hoffman's reason was. I mean, I don't know why it took 3 years for him to get in, but you know, you have the Pete Rose example and you have the Barry Bonds example. Completely three different cases as to why they were not in.
Yeah, well, none of them valid because they're really, really good baseball players, Jared, and they're not in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I would agree. Broke.
I can't wait to see what percentage the all-time holds leader gets after whoever that is retires.
It's going to be like Darren O'Day, just waiting on it.
He was the greatest at what he ever did.
But yeah, I think right now I'm happy with this class, but I couldn't help but look at the guys who did not get in. Edgar Martinez being that one glaring example. How the
criminal.
Fuck is this guy not in the Hall of Fame? And to his credit, that was his 9th attempt to get into the Hall of Fame. He was at like 70-ish percent. It was like 70.4. I still think that he'll get in next year, which will be his last attempt to get in 10 years. Why do you think, Dallas, it's taking this? Because it can't just be the deal. Like, what is it? Like, how do we, create an award for the best DH and name it after Edgar Martinez and then tell him that, yeah, DH isn't a real position. You can't be a Hall of Famer. And I had this debate with Big Cat last night. Shout out Evening Yak. he was basically saying, oh, you need to play the field, this and that. It's like, no, the DH is a position that is 44 fucking years old. This is not a new thing that we haven't had time to sit on. Like, what do we make of this? Edgar Martinez is the best DH of all time. It pains me to say that. He is. He's the best DH of all time. They name the fucking award for him, given out to the best DH every single year. And on top of all that, It's a guy that it has just handled all this with class. He threw a tweet out there. He said, congrats to all the guys that got in. He easily, if I were in his shoes, I'd be like, how the fuck am I not also in this Hall of Fame class? It is insane to me that we can't just acknowledge that, you know, a DH should be in. And with the Big Cat discussion, that was him saying, well, he doesn't play defense. And I said, that's more of an argument for MVP. If you want to tell me that a DH can't be the MVP because a position player is always going to be more valuable because they play defense, they're hitting, that's fine. But we're talking Hall of Fame here. And if it's we're talking Hall of Fame designated hitters, he is the guy. He's not just a guy. He's the guy.
The bar. He is the bar.
Yeah.
He is the bar. The reason he's not in is because, for whatever reason, baseball writers or baseball vote holders, I don't want to just call them all writers, but whoever they are, the folks that hold votes, there's a portion of them that feel it's okay and it is actually their duty, their obligation to exercise their vendettas and their personal emotion against a certain player and against the game, instead of just assessing what these players did as baseball players. They want to judge them as men off the field. They want to judge them as human beings in the community. All right. And I understand that those are all areas of character that can make great arguments for people. But at the end of the day, if this is a museum representing the best performers of its entire existence, we've got to just get over the fact that you didn't like him because he drank, or you didn't like him for whatever other reason you might have, or because he didn't give you the interview, or because you think the position he played wasn't as relevant because you were covering the game in an era where it wasn't and it didn't mean. Like, get the fuck over it. Get over it. Get over it.
So there's obviously a lot of people with votes still, even though they've done some decent purging and turnover,
yep,
that have no business voting for the Hall of Fame.
It's disgusting. It's disgusting. It's disgusting to watch these ballots get, like, for me, if you aren't, let's start here. If you aren't checking 10 boxes on a list of 11 or more Hall of Fame potential players, you're an asshole. So, that's kind of how I feel about it.
So
that's kind of how I feel about it.
It was kind of laid out for me yesterday on Twitter where all revelations occur, right?
Of course.
And I don't really mean anything by calling out these two people specifically, but it's just a great contrast. So someone asked our friend of the podcast, Carl Ravitch, about his Hall of Fame thoughts or who he would vote for or his thoughts on the class or whatever. And he, you know, said congrats to yada, 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 think it's a great class, and responded like, but they don't allow national baseball broadcasters to vote or voices like him. And about 72 hours earlier, I saw Dan Graziano's thing about his vote for Hideki Matsui. Dan Graziano also works for ESPN. I used to work there. Dan Graziano, in all of my interactions with him, was either exclusively on NFL Live, NFL Insiders, or SportsCenter. Like, this is not a fine guy. This is not a baseball person, right?
Right.
And the fact that he is lodging Hall of Fame votes and Carl Ravitch isn't, you could sub Dan's name for a lot of people and you could sub Carl's name for a lot of people, but they work at the same company, right?
Right.
And because of some archaic way that it used to work, and you get to keep them forever if you want to. Like, he had a vote, and a guy who's been covering the sport for legitimately the last 25 years does not.
It's insane.
That, That's where this needs to start. You want the Hall of Fame to start shaping up and being representative of the eras and the players who played in it. You cannot have your great-grandfather voting on the future of Francisco Lindor because he doesn't like guys who dye their hair and smile when they round the bases after they hit a jack. That's horseshit. That is horseshit. And these players are suffering because of it, because of guys like Dan Graziani. Never met the dude. Clearly, probably not a guy I could have a beer with and enjoy it, because I just can't get on board with shit like that. Tuck it in. Hideki Matsui, great player. Tremendous teammate. I got the opportunity to play next to that guy. Fucking amazing human being. Hall of Famer, he is not, sir. Stop it.
All of his time evaluating defensive ends and personnel decisions from NFL front offices evidently led him to not vote for Jim Thome.
Yeah, let me ask
Jesus
you this. You're taking Hideki Matsui over Edgar Martinez? Over Edgar Martinez. There's no logical explanation for laying their numbers side by side and choosing the
I actually think the Hideki Matsui thing is relatively interesting, and you could probably spend an entire podcast talking about international baseball impact and what sort of value that really has. It's not the same way that the Basketball Hall of Fame operates, in that they really reward career achievements and impact on all sorts of levels, right?
Right.
Like a huge part of Carmelo, and not to get too far away, but a huge part of Carmelo Anthony's eventual Hall of Fame case will be his Olympic success, right?
Right. It's the Baseball Hall of Fame. It's not the MLB Hall
correct.
Of Fame.
I don't know. It's just crazy. But going back to Edgar, to some of the stuff Dallas says about why you asked he was not getting the respect that he deserves, I think it's kind of twofold. A, his counting stats are not what I think a lot of people look for out of Hall of Famers. He had 309 home runs. He had about 1,200 RBI. I don't care about that, to be clear, but I think there are 500 home run guys who are not getting love for the Hall of Fame. McGriff's up there. What was he at, 494 or whatever?
493.
Yeah, something, whatever it is. So I think that's one part. And to go to the argument you had with Big Cat, which I listened to part of and I have heard in the office otherwise, you don't have to play the field. What you have to do is reach a higher threshold of offensive production, right?
Yeah.
If you're not going to be an asset in part of the game, it doesn't mean that you can't possibly be really valuable.
Right.
It just means that the standard for what you are contributing in is higher, and everybody knows that.
Yep.
That's why David Ortiz, while an incredible offensive player, really was never in serious MVP discussion year after year, right? Because
he did have that one year.
Right, right. But was not, even though the offensive levels would have suggested that he was an MVP caliber player.
Correct.
He was never routinely getting those because, of course, there is a penalty associated with it, right? But that doesn't mean he's not a Hall of Fame player.
Exactly.
Right.
I think that it's, and that was my whole argument, was if you want to penalize the guy for not playing defense, that's more of an MVP argument versus a Hall of Fame argument. It is a position. You created it almost half a century ago. And we're still trying to penalize these guys. But again, I sort of look at it as, yes, it was created 44 years ago, but outside of Edgar and David Ortiz, there really haven't been any guys who I think merit Hall of Fame consideration. So it's not like we're like, oh, we got to put in all these guys because they're good DHs. No, there's really just two. Like David Ortiz, Edgar Martinez, those are really the two guys that have emerged since the DH as a
right.
Hall of Famer.
And then it's like, so when you take a I don't know. We've already discussed this earlier in the season, early last, Kenley Jansen's career trajectory, right? As a closer, the save has lost its luster amongst analytics and amongst basically the way relievers are now assessed, all right? It's going to shape into, can you perform multiple innings or can I continue to bank on you for high leverage situations? And there's going to be those rare breeds like a Kenley who just come into the game and lock down the ninth, and that's what they do. And they're going to be revered and valued. Same thing with the DH, all right? There's going to be guys who fill the DH role. And frankly, I believe before we see an expansion in the game with teams, I think we'll see the DH come about before in the NL. I think they'll do away with pitchers hitting before they make the jump to adding another team to each league.
Do you think so, if they add the DH to the National League, that it'll help Hall of Fame cases for guys who are strictly DHs?
Yes, but it's still going. You're still going to have to hit like. You're still going to have to now be that pure DH.
I mean,
like,
Edgar Martinez's career OPS is fucking 933. Like, that is
right,
insane. Like, if you want to look at the overall numbers.
What it's going to hurt is a guy who might be able to play a position early on and then go to DH and doesn't perform to an Edgar sort of bar or a Poppy sort of bar as a DH. And they get knocked for that because they say, well, you know, when he was on the field, he was able to do X, Y, and Z, and that was worth this, kind of like Jay Hay said. But when he actually got sent out to pasture and just put in the DH-only role, he was only actually this valuable. So I think it'll get to a point where you start combining WAR as a position player as a in conjunction with a DH, and that's going to start to play a role in it. But I think if the game goes to a DH in both leagues, that will start to make a case for the arguments for DH guys getting in. But you're going to have to ball out. I mean, and we're going to see it. We're going to see guys going through the minor leagues now, strictly just hitters.
Right.
And that's, you
like
know,
a Kyle Schwarber. Like if he would be a DH if the National League had the DH. Because like you said, like Paul Molitor in the Hall of Fame was a DH, but was not, I don't think he's considered to be a Hall of Fame designated hitter. I think that's another example of, you know, this guy got to a certain age. We're going to move him to just DH. Ortiz was like 27 years old, and they were like, you're a DH, pal. And he was like, okay, that's
right,
fine by me.
His defense said he's a DH. Yeah. His defense said he was a DH.
Yeah, yeah. Same with Edgar. But yeah, I think like a guy like Schwarber, that's another example of a guy who would be a lifelong DH without, you know,
The bottom line is, look, organizations already have to worry about, you know, and guys going out on dirt bikes and doing shit that they shouldn't be doing.
Shout out, Matt,
during the season and jacking themselves up. Organizations already got to worry about that. All right. So if they are given the opportunity to reel in a starting pitcher's potential to get hurt because they're taking at bats, if they can do away with that, if the ownership can do away with that, and that's something that gets thrown around in a CBA, and now we can provide another job maybe for DHs, that's how I look at it. You know, it's another 15 jobs across the game that you can give to a guy looking to swing it.
All right, I got some rapid-fire Hall of Fame stuff before we move on for you guys. Just quick reactions. How encouraged are you by Mike Mussina's jump of about 11, 12%? Do you think he's eventually going to get in? He's at about 63 right now.
I forecast him for 2 years from now.
Okay.
Yeah. I'd say two years.
I'd say him and Schill. I like him and Schilling going in together.
Yeah.
In 2 years,
Schill better hurry up.
Yeah.
He was up about 6%, and he's I think about 10 or 12% behind Moose. I was thinking about this. It doesn't really matter, of course. Would you rather be Jim Thome, who got like 89% and is a first ballot Hall of Famer?
Or
would you rather be Vlad Guerrero, who got a higher percentage of the vote, but it took him 2 years?
I mean, I would rather be Thome because voting percentage doesn't really matter unless you are like Griffey and you can say, yeah, by the way, it's all about pickup lines, Dallas. Yeah, by the way, yep. I got the highest voting percentage of all time. Or, sup, babe, I'm a first ballot Hall of Famer. You trying to get this dick? It's basically right. One or the other. I don't care if I have a higher percentage, but I get it on the second ballot. That does nothing for me.
No, I totally agree. I get it. You know, there's A's, there's A pluses. And if you're not the highest A plus, then you're just kind of all the same. And if you're the first ballot guy, it's like, look, they didn't need to fucking rethink this. All right.
Right.
It was a done deal. I took the uni off. And it was a done deal.
I'm with you. Looking ahead to next year, the obvious candidate is Mariano Rivera.
Yep.
There's the speculation regarding him. Is it whether he'll get in? It's whether he will threaten some sort of all-time vote mark. Do we think?
No. God, no. God, no. No, he won't, because there's some jackass wagon that's going to throw down a big gauntlet of why I can't vote for Mariano Rivera and why Hideki Matsui gets my vote. Like that'll happen. It just because that's a spiteful world we live in. Somebody's going to say, you know what? It's my duty to not allow a 100% vote getter. I cannot be a keeper of the game. How will I go to these press box lunchrooms and be respected if I allow Mo to walk in there 100% Scott? I can't do it, Jay Hay.
There's definitely, it's, you know, it sounds ridiculous, the type of person that you just described, but there's one person. There's like several guys
Yeah, you know what? Let's take an over-under on how many votes or on how many people not vote for
Vlad. So it's interesting you said that because I actually had a back and forth on Twitter with former colleagues of mine on the over-under for his vote percentage, and one of them laid the line at 96.5%, and I said I'd take the over.
On 96.5?
Correct.
Chipper was 97.2. What was Griffey? 90? What was he?
I think it's like 98 or something like that.
Yeah. I would
take the over on 96. Look, I'm not saying it's not. What I'm saying is it will not be 100%.
No, I agree.
It will not be.
No, we'll never 100%. See 100%. If it wasn't Griffey, then it won't be anybody.
Right. So, like, but is there ever a case? Like, is Mariano the only case left?
I think
that could be.
I think Mo and Jeter are going to both have that conversation bandied about.
Yeah, which is odd because I think that Rivera has a much better case than Jeter.
Right, Jeter was never the greatest
of anything, you know, at what he does. You know, he's a great player, but he's not the greatest of all time at anything.
I know what I'm starting here, and we're not going to go there.
Yeah.
my fourth rapid fire before we move on to the interview, Roy Halladay.
Yes.
He's also on the ballot next year.
Correct.
Do we think he gets in next year?
I sure do. Which is interesting because do I think he would have gotten in on the first ballot if he were still alive? Because you get to bypass the wait 5 years if you're deceased. So I do think that, I mean, there's no point to like delay the inevitable. Like, I do think he's a Hall of Famer. Had he not passed away, I do think it might have taken a couple tries, maybe two or three max. But I do think he'll get on the first ballot next year.
Yeah. Is that was the caveat, the first ballot? I don't know that I heard that. I'm going to say yes. Just because with the way things are going, like my point I made earlier, there's a lot about Roy Halladay that you can make an argument. He's a Hall of Fame person, right? And agree or disagree with how he lived his life off the field, he's a Hall of Fame person. Hall of Fame player. So
yes or no on first ballot?
Yes. Fuck, okay. I said yes.
Okay.
I blacked out. It was rapid fire. And then I think he deserves to get in on the merits of his career regardless of his, the tragic death.
Yeah, for sure.
I would have been pushing for his candidate. I do think it's weird, though, if he gets in before Moose and Schill.
I agree with that 100%.
We don't have, like, I don't want to compare the guys because I think they're all worthy, and obviously their off-the-field stuff all impacts this, but it is hard.
And that's what I'm talking about. The guy Roy Halladay is the one who, I don't want to say separates himself,
but just
the way he's revered through the eyes that actually cast these votes, you know?
It's just almost impossible to look at their three careers and conclude this guy is the first ballot or immediate Hall of Famer, and these other guys have to slog through a decade of begging to get in.
Yeah, Schill absolutely deserves it. I'm pissed off. We'll get back to that, though. We're not done with this little Hall of Fame discussion because we want to continue it with a good little friend of ours, Tommy Pham, outfielder for the St. Louis Cardinals. Got a nice little interview for you here today, so check that out.
Blue Apron is the leading meal kit delivery service in the U.S., and while many people know what they do, many don't know about the types of meals that you can eat when you cook with Blue Apron. I do, though.
You do.
Because I'm deep in this game now.
Way deep.
Yeah, I got some...
How deep?
I got some codes, and I got some foods, okay? You're not just having burgers for dinner. You're making short rib burgers with a hoppy cheddar sauce on a pretzel bun. I'm in.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't be eating that, though, because I have a gluten,
you have to watch
I have
your
a gluten issue, but yep. I love it anyway. You're preparing seared steaks and thyme pan sauce with mashed potatoes, green beans, and crispy shallots. That sounds like a meal you would have.
Yes.
You're like a hearty Americana type of guy.
Yep.
We talked about that yesterday. Those are all in under 45 minutes and without a single trip to the grocery store for 8 weeks ending on February 26th. So we got about a month left now.
I mean, that's literally a month from today.
Wow. Blue Apron is teaming with Whole30 to bring you delicious recipes. Our menu will feature two Whole30 approved recipes each week,
like
seared steaks and warm lemon salsa verde with roasted broccoli and sweet potato. Some people are calling me salsa verde around my place now.
Oh, hashtag salsa verde.
Chicken.
Tweet that at Jay Hey Kid.
Chicken and kale orange salad with spicy tahini dressing. I could see you getting in there.
Yeah.
Kickstart it up. Kickstart your new year with Blue Apron and Whole30. Here's the important part.
Blue Apron is
treating Starting Nine listeners to $30 off your first order if you visit blueapron.com/starting. So check out this week's menu and get your $30 off with free shipping at blueapron.com/starting. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
That's a deal.
Dallas, what's up, man? I remember your perfect king.
Oh, holla.
Yeah, babe, I
like how this interview's going already,
yeah,
Jared. Keep going.
Don't blow his head up. He talks about it every single day. I'm tired of hearing about it.
The first
question that I have for you is the Hall of Fame class got announced last night. We're about the same age. Who was your favorite player out of this class to watch growing up?
Out of that Hall of Fame class, I would probably say Chipper Jones, man.
Yeah.
And not only that, you know, I have a real cool story. He did a home run derby in Las Vegas. It was called the Big League Challenge.
Mm-hmm.
It was around when I was 10 to 12 years old. And I happened to get him, Andrew Jones, and Harold Reynolds autograph after the event. So, you know, I actually saw him this past spring training, and I told him the story. So, you know, it's pretty cool for me.
Yeah,
Chipper. And I still have that.
Yeah, Chipper's definitely a guy that was worthy of being a first ballot Hall of Famer. A lot of fun to watch. That was the other thing, too, because the Braves were on TBS. So even if you weren't a Braves fan, you were kind of just like, oh, shit, the Braves are on. I'm just going to end up watching the Braves. And that was all those teams from the 90s that won all those division titles. But, you know, like for me, I know that a lot of kids, because I'm from Boston, but there are a lot of Braves fans from watching the Braves on TBS. But you're from Las Vegas. Obviously, there's no baseball team out there. So did you have a favorite team growing up as a kid, or did you more just follow your favorite players?
I did have a favorite team, but I had a lot of favorite players as well. But my favorite of them all was Derek Jeter. So, you know, I was by trade a Yankee fan.
Oh,
you know, my mom's actually from New York, so it kind of tied all together.
Yep. And I mean, like, obviously the Yankees are very historical baseball team, but talk about what it's like to play for the St. Louis Cardinals, because right behind the Yankees you have the Cardinals in terms of championships. And even when they're not winning championships, it seems like the Cardinals are always at least above 500. So what does it mean to be a part of an organization that winning is of the utmost importance every single year?
You kind of said it, you know, the history. You know, there's a lot of tradition. You know, every year, you know, we bring out the Cardinal greats, you know, during opening day as part of the tradition. And, you know, we had the most World Series in the National League, and the fans, you know, the fans are so dedicated, committed, and loving, you know, to us players that it makes it a really special place to play.
One thing, Tommy, I want to ask, because I've talked about this a lot, man, and I can appreciate shit like this having played in Oakland, because, you know, like it or not, the big league door between the big leagues and AAA is revolving. A lot of guys, you see them with frequency. I've always felt like the Cardinals do a great job of bringing guys in to the big leagues and not necessarily up to the big leagues. And what I mean by that is when you boys show up, you know what's expected of you. You have the ability to execute and perform at this level. But it just feels like everybody in that clubhouse understands that you are now a part of this chain. and you're not looked at any differently. Like, sure, we all understand. Well, not all of us, because you and I are the only big leaguers on this fucking podcast right now, Tommy. Holla. But we know how that clubhouse dynamic goes, how veterans take care of the younger guys, and how we are supposed to interact as young guys. What is that like in the Cardinal organization? And if there were guys that sort of took you under their wing, or just let you know that, hey, you're a part of us now. None of this rookie BS. Like, you know your place, but you're a part of us now. Who were those guys?
You know, that's one good thing. You know, I was lucky to come across as, Waino, Yachty, and Holiday. The big three. And, playing for the Cardinals, there's the expectations. No matter if you're a veteran or a rookie, for you to go out there and do your job, do what's expected. You know, you're expected to play hard, and you're expected to play the game right. You know, there's going to be times, you know, where you go out and you make a mistake. That happens. You're human. No one's perfect. But for the most part, you're expected to go out there and play hard and play the game the right way. And that's all a team and your teammates, an organization can ask for a player. It's for you to go out and do those few things each and every night. And, we really preach that within the Cardinals organization. And as a rookie, when you come up, it's not, you have to go out there and, put up these monster numbers. You just got to do things the right way. And if you do that, everything else will be there. And your teammates will have a whole lot of respect for you. You know, going out there and playing the game the right way, just being a true professional.
Hey, sure. Tommy, can you talk to us about your 2017 season? In a lot of senses, it was kind of a breakthrough, breakout campaign for you. What was it like to experience that? What worked differently for you? Was it all really just about health?
It was a lot of things. You know, there's a ton of emotion. You know, good. You know, I'm happy for the season I had. Looking back at it, during the season, Dallas, playing a full season, man, it's a grind. It's stressful day in and day out. I have such high expectations for myself, so everything I did wasn't something I never believed I can do. I always believed I could do this. A lot of it was a matter of health. You know, coming up in the minors, I remember we had certain officials, Vooch, Lunau at the time, you know, they always believed I could be a 2020 player back in 08, because that minor league season, I hit almost 20 home runs, and I believe I stole 20 bases, but I hit 230. You know, but I played good defense, and they're just – you put it all together, you're really special. So they believed in me way back then. And when I was kind of figuring things out around 2010, you know, the injuries just came literally back to back to back years. And,
right.
You know, we're talking injuries where, you know, surgery, I'm done for the whole year. Surgery, I'm done. You know, so I literally missed like 3 years because of injuries. So it was never, oh, he's not a big leaguer. They believed I was a big leaguer. It was just a matter of, I need to find a way to stay healthy. Then once I was able to achieve my health, sort of say, the opportunity kind of closed on me. So I had to recreate this opportunity. You know, you know how the game works. You know all the political stuff within the game.
Absolutely.
I had to create myself a new opportunity once I lost that previous opportunity. But I've always envisioned myself as an elite player, because you know I run fast. You know, I hit the ball with a little bit of pop, and you know, due to my athleticism, I'm able to run the bases well and play good defense. So it was a matter of me figuring out from the health standpoint,
that I need to become more mobile, not necessarily more stronger, but more mobile throughout my body to stay on the field for a full season.
So let me ask you this, because you mentioned speed, right? You mentioned the wheels. You got some getaway sticks on you, no doubt. Is there any thought to utilizing this? Are we going to see the Tommy Pham who can swipe 25, maybe even 30? Because I tell you right now, brother, I feel absolutely you could have 30-30 potential in you. But with that, okay, comes playing the game in a different style, a little bit different fashion, might be being a little more aggressive on the base path. Is there any hesitance to doing so because of the injury past? Or is it more of a, you know what, I've got my feet underneath me now. I've got the healthy foundation. I can go out and be the Tommy Pham that I know I can be, that these men have had the confidence in me becoming. Is that the thought?
I believe it's smart aggressiveness is what I need to accomplish. You know, you want to play the game smart. You know, you don't want to, if I don't have to dive, then, you know, I don't want to be diving. You know, if I could steal a base with knowing I'm safe, you know, when you take off to steal a base, you generally know in the back of your mind, if you have a good jump and if you need to go head first or feet first. So, you know, I look at it like get better jumps. I'm working on improving my speed, you know, to help me, steal more bases actually. But, I am thinking about stealing more bases this year, feet first, to kind of protect my shoulders. But at the same time, I'm actually working on my shoulder mobility, you know, that extra range of motion can help prevent future injuries down the road.
Right. One last question before we let you go. You know, last offseason, the Cardinals added Dexter Fowler. This offseason, they've added Marcell Ozuna, who hit 37 bombs last year. For the Cardinals fans out there who are listening, talk about how special this outfield is going to be in 2018.
Very special. We all have big expectations, you know, but with big expectations, you know, extra pressure on that, but I believe, you know, if you prepare right, it eliminates all that pressure. But we're all special athletes, you know, and we know what's expected of us, and we know how important it will be for all of us to stay on the field. And if we could go out and just duplicate our seasons from the past, this past season, you know, we're going to be special.
Mm-hmm. And the one question that we ask all of our guests is, if you could go back in time to any moment in baseball history to watch it live in person, what would it be?
Whew. That's a tough one.
Yeah.
Because I have so many favorite players. You know, Jeter. I was a big Jeter fan. A-Rod, Bonds, Griffey, Ricky Henderson.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, all those players achieved a lot in the game. You know, I was looking up Barry Bonds stats last night, actually. And
they're a joke.
They're amazing. Yeah. I would actually like to see that home run he hit at Yankee Stadium when it went on the, like, upper deck.
Yep.
You know? Major upper tank, bro. Major upper tank. Right, heads up, right. Peanut guy. Look the fuck out.
Or some of those balls he hit and San Fran, because, you know, I hit so many balls off that fence and warning track this past season. I'm just like, how did this guy just, you know, completely hit balls into the right center?
That's big boy territory. That's big boy territory. I grew up watching that, Tommy. I grew up watching that, man. Yeah. That was absolutely ridiculous display of man strength.
Yeah, so one of those moments.
Yeah, we'd probably join you. We're a Barry Bonds-friendly podcast here. We're big Bonds guys. We pretty much mention Bonds at least once a week, even though even if he's never in the headlines. We'll just drop in some random Bonds knowledge.
Nice.
All right, he's Tommy Pham. Thank you so much for stopping by the podcast. Best of luck to you and the St. Louis Cardinals in 2018.
Thanks for having me, guys. Take care.
Take it easy.
All right, buddy.
All right. Bye.
ForHims.com. It is a one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, sexual wellness, all of that for men.
Oh, yeah.
I know we're all getting up in that age where Dallas
has a baby, but Dallas has a sex trophy over there.
That is true.
I'm a fucking alpha, boys. That's how this goes.
Medical grade solutions, real doctors offering well-known generic equivalents to name brand prescriptions to help you keep your hair. I think we're doing pretty well on this podcast as far as that goes. A lot of flow.
Yeah.
No herbal. Different parts of our heads. No herbal supplements, prescription solutions backed by science, no waiting room, no awkward doctor visits. Save hours by going to 4hims.com. Answer a few quick questions. Doctor will review and prescribe you directly to your door. I hate going to the doctor, so that sounds awesome.
I like it. I like just like dropping trow and just seeing the reaction.
That is so strange. If I could never be in a doctor's office again. For him,
Mr. Carabas, can you please pull your pants up? You were here for the flu.
Yeah, this was. This is your fourth visit this week, sir. All right, order now. My listeners get a trial month of everything you need to keep your hair for just $5 today, right now, while supplies last. See the website for full details. This would cost hundreds if you went to the doctor or a pharmacy, possibly millions. Go to 4hims.com/9. That's F-O-R-H-I-M-S. .com/9 4hims/9.
All right, big thanks to Tommy Pham for stopping by, talking a little baseball with us. Always appreciate the conversation. But we do have some Twitter questions from the grounds crew this week. Obviously, it being Hall of Fame week, there's a lot of there's some hot stove, but there's also some Hall of Fame shit in there too.
For sure. So checking in from the grounds crew. First and foremost, there was the report that Yu Darvish is likely to sign somewhere this week from JP Morosi.
Yep, TikTok.
We have been asking at the end of each podcast whether something's going to happen. Do you guys think Yu Darvish signs, and where do you think he signs?
Nope. So? The fact that I honestly don't think that he'll sign this week, just because they said that he's going to sign this week. That's just how this offseason has been going.
I don't think he will, and I follow OU on Twitter, and he's a good follow.
Yeah, he's pretty
especially
witty.
If you can invoke that. Oh, he's great. I love it. He's having fun with this process. You know, he's talked about the mystery team popping up, and now we've got Philly kicking the tires. You know, I love it. I love to see it, but no, I don't see it happening soon.
So as it relates to Darvish, that's our next question. Also, this is from Bleacher Life at Bricks Ivy 4417. Over the next 4 years, would you rather have Darvish or Arrieta as an anchor on your pitching staff?
Ooh, quickly, I'm going to say Arrieta, and these are because I do have a feel for how he prepares his body. I do have a feel for how he goes about his business.
Yeah, you do.
I think what we saw out of Darvish, might be a trend. Those big games, can he get it done? Those questions, I don't know. So I think Arrieta,
I'd rather have Darvish. I'd rather have Darvish.
I think the stuff's better for Arrieta.
I think the stuff's better for Darvish. Stuff. Yeah, I think we've already seen Arrieta's peak. And we could have obviously seen Darvish's peak too, but I still think that I think that Darvish still has the better odds of having more valuable seasons moving forward than Arrieta.
I look at workload. Darvish has logged 2,100 innings in the big leagues, in Major League Baseball and the Nippon League combined, I believe. Arrieta, roughly 1,000 less at 1,161 innings. Darvish just started 295 games to Arrieta's 191.
Well, you're counting his Japanese league numbers. You're not counting Arrieta's minor league numbers.
What's that? Darvish played in the Nippon major leagues. There was no minor league for him. He just straight Nippon.
Yeah, but you're talking about like innings and like workload. So, obviously the wear and tear still exists in the minors.
Wear and tears. I'm the one who made this chart up here, Jared. It's about the big leagues, all right?
Okay.
I'm not. Yeah.
Okay.
Jesus. Sorry. My fucking gate, guy. You're not good at playing my games.
All right. I'm going to go with Darvish. I buy into the fact that he was tipping his pitches and that I buy into that idea that the Dodgers kind of found something with his sequencing that's going to kind of unlock another level. Matt D'Avignon.
Hell of a name.
At Matt Avignon. I'm pronouncing it how I think it is. No confirmation there. Never met him. Yeah. Will Wilson. So Wilson Contreras had that comment about he's going to be better than Molina and Posey. Will Wilson Contreras be better than Molina or Posey?
Neither. I would say that's a conservative answer.
Yeah, but I'm going to go with no, not this career.
Okay.
Maybe next one.
Maybe the next one.
I think he's going to be more I think he's going to be – here's my hot take. I bet he posts –
he's going to be good.
Yeah, I think he's going to be better than those guys this year.
Like, are we talking defensively or
no,
offensively,
I'm talking about
the whole package?
We'll just say I think as measured by war, I think Wilson Contreras will be better than both of those guys. I know that's aggressive with Posey, but I'm going there.
If we're going by wins above replacement, I would rank them Posey, Contreras, and Molina for 2018.
And I would agree with Jared there.
Yeah, that's the safe play.
No.
He hits bombs, though, Contreras.
He does. He hits fucking bombs.
Check out his
He ain't afraid to pick a motherfucker off either.
Check out his second half numbers last year. Yeah. Yeah. Tanner Weimers at Wimes_12. Dallas, what was your favorite minor league city that you played in? I'm assuming it didn't have to be your home team.
No, but I will say this. I played in Sacramento, which is just City of Trees, hashtag NorCal. So Sacramento is gorgeous, beautiful city, great nightlife downtown. For me, I love the Pacific Northwest, so I'm going to say Portland. Portland, huge fan. They have this place called Dante's Inferno, and you could walk in there dressed like you were going to a Marilyn Manson concert, and you were not by any means turning heads in there. There was some absolute freak show type shit going down in Dante's Inferno. It was amazing. So, great little sleeper. Great little sleeper minor league city.
Nobody cares, but I like Lowell. Hmm. The Spinners. It's a single-A affiliate. Fucking love the Spinners. I threw out the first pitch for the Spinners one time. I got to go back and ask one of those Sox prospects guys, because I have a picture of the dude who caught the first pitch, and I like gassed him up, and he did not see that coming. Scared the shit out of him. Like threw like an actual fastball from the rubber. That was pretty sweet. I got to find out who that was.
I saw Rafael Devers in Hartford this past summer.
Really?
Yeah, that was cool.
I saw him at the casino on Friday night just walking around like a big stupid baby. He is so dumb. He was walking around looking like fucking Tommy Pickles. Like by himself. Just it was crazy. All right, so we're taking a quick break from our show to remind you that audio content from Barstool is now available 24 hours a fucking day, Dallas, around the clock on Sirius XM Power 85. You wake up with Barstool Breakfast featuring JSB, Julie Stewart Binks. You got Francis, you got Willie Colon. Then spend the rest of your morning with the boys over in Indy, the Pat McAfee Show and Heartland Radio. 1 p.m. Eastern, you check in with the chicks in the office, Rhea and Fran, for an hour of pop culture talk, and then end the day with Barstool Radio. You got my dad, Dave Portnoy, KFC, Liz Gonzalez, that trio over there at Barstool Radio. And then, after that, guess what? It's fucking Yak Pack time. The Evening Yak with Big Cat, Roan, and Jared Carabas. A great little trio that closes off the day from 6 to 7. Won't you join us? I would love it if you did. Try it for free 30 days. SiriusXM.com/SXM-try-free. Dallas, I'm curious to get your thoughts on this here. A-Rod is going to be, your buddy, is going to be doing Sunday Night Baseball with Matt Vasgersian, who I think is one of the best baseball broadcasters in the game right now. What do you think of the trio of A-Rod and Vasgersian in the booth with Jess Mendoza?
Well, unfortunately, I feel like there was probably a few good candidates who it appears got bypassed or passed up, if you will.
Such as?
Hashtag Ravi Boogshambi.
Yep, Ravi, Boog. I mean, even my boy Flem Dog, him and his third grade picture day haircut. I feel like all of those guys are more than capable. I've shared the booth with all three of those dudes, and exceptional human beings, and even better professionals. But I think this is just indicative of ESPN's need to attach its trailer to something that they feel can propel them out from maybe where they're at or where they're lying. And there's no doubt that what A-Rod can bring to the game, can bring to a telecast, is something people want to listen to. This is a, you know, Hall of Fame mind, regardless of what you think about him. And that's something you got to remove. If you're interested in the game, you got to think that a guy like Matt Bascurian understands what people want, how they want to have it delivered to them. And that's the key now. So they've identified that. They understand that MLB Network is doing amazing shit with the game. And these guys represent that. And A-Rod, we saw what he does during the postseason, and people are on board with that. So, you know, just like they came knocking on Barstool's door and understood that they needed to invite the cool kids to the party, well, this is what's going on. They've found who they think are cool kids, and I think I'm in agreement with you, Jared. Matty V has been slaying the dragon for a hot minute.
Yep.
On MLB Network. Fucking love it. Love every minute of it.
He's got a lot of personality, but he also has great. It's almost like there's two different versions of Matty V. There's like the TV version, and then there's the broadcast version, and they're both great. It's hard to be great at one. He's great at both.
Yeah, you have to, and you do. You have to wear multiple hats in that regard. You have to be different. You have to convey things differently, and you're right. He does that very well.
Yeah. Another little story before we move on here. The Padres social media. I saw it on Twitter. No, it was on Instagram. Did they post it on Instagram and Facebook? It was on several different pages.
I just saw our boy Ozzie Stern.
Was it on there?
And I retweeted him.
Okay. It doesn't matter. Yeah. One of the fucking social media accounts for the Padres posted a picture of Eric Hosmer, which was very quickly deleted. And you won't believe it, Dallas, but the Padres maintain that they were hacked.
Yes.
So are you buying that they were hacked, or are they trying to tell us something?
I'd like to believe the latter.
Yeah.
But I fully appreciate the stance we've taken. This is our world. It's our world, boys. You don't ever have to acknowledge it. Nope, I was hacked. Sorry, wasn't me. Hacked.
If you accidentally tweeted a dick pic, would you just own up to it, or would you say you got hacked?
I'd probably own it, to be honest.
Me too.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would say that is me in all my glory.
Yeah, I'd be like, no, dude, that's my dick. I would pin it to my page. I'd be like, honestly, I didn't mean to tweet this, but since it's here you go, internet. This is my dick.
Download, rate, and subscribe.
Yeah. Please retweet to spread awareness.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you got to. But this is the fucking MO, man. This is the MO. Nope, sorry. Wasn't me. You don't have to fess up to shit these days. And the Padres are not going. You might as well print out every negotiation you've ever had and post that just to stoke the fire. And then just go, we got hacked. That wasn't me. Doesn't matter. You don't have to own it. You don't have to own it.
All right, you guys ready to play everyone's favorite Starring Nine game?
Yes.
It's called, Is Anything Going to Happen Before the Next Time We Record a Podcast? Dallas?
What's today? Today's the... Yeah, Thursday. I'm going to say yes.
Okay.
I'm going to say, just because I talked about him, I'm going to put energy out there.
Yep.
I'm going to put it out there in the world. Jake Arrieta.
Oh,
finds a home.
You think Arrieta signs before Darvish?
I think Arrieta signs before Darvish.
Wow. Bold take. Jay Hay, what do you got?
Arrieta signs before Darvish.
You Darvish signs with the Chicago Cubs.
I like that pick. I'm going to stick with my usual pick, which is nothing is going to happen, just because I haven't been wrong yet. But if I were to pick something, I would pick exactly what Jay Hay just said. Wow. I would say Darvish goes to the Cubs.
Wow.
Are you milking them under the table out there?
Yeah. You missed one podcast and the synergy over here is...
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Darvish to the Cubs would be my pick, but I am saying that the next time that we meet, ain't shit going to happen. No trades. Actually, right. There could be a trade. I don't know. But I would say still no free agent signings.
Because I feel like teams are like, all right, you know what? We need to quit fiddle fucking around here. We need guys. We need to fill out a team. We need to get some shit going. I mean, the Mets, they're ahead of it, right? They've invited Tebow to big league camp. Like, they've got those decisions.
Yeah. For sure. All right, we want to say thanks to our producer, Justin Havens. You can check him out on Twitter, at JHeyKid. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram, at Starting9. Subscribe on iTunes, rate the show, leave a review. Also, tell a friend about what we're doing over here at Starting9. We're trying to keep each other sane. Well, literally zero free agents are signing anywhere, but maybe they will next time. So if they do, we'll talk about it. And if they don't, we'll attempt to talk about other things.
Peace.
Bye.